I think it's up to us, all of us, to keep pointing out to people, think about the power that you have in organizing. Think about how you come together with your neighbor and stand up for what you need and what your community. And yes, you have to assess power, but you just don't have to take it either. In this country, it's always been a fight of money versus the power of people. And it's always a challenge. And organizing is the way forward.
Welcome to the 333rd installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. From the day it was launched over four decades ago, LSP has used grassroots organizing to work for positive change in rural communities and on the land. This has taken the form of community meetings in church basements and citizen actions that confront corporate power, as well as lots of conversations in farm fields and around kitchen tables. One example of how such organizing can have far-reaching impacts is the pork checkoff campaign LSP was involved in almost a quarter century ago. In the late 1990s, it had become clear that the National Pork Producers Council was using the checkoff money it collects from every hog sold in the country to promote the kind of industry that does not represent the interests of small and medium-sized hog farmers. As prices paid to farmers plummeted, Pork Producers Council officials promoted the idea that the only way to survive was to expand and quote-unquote grab market share. In effect, hog farmers were fueling their own demise by paying into a system that was promoting the industrialized, consolidated, factory farm model of pork production. And to top it off, the large CAFOs that were spawned by this system pollute air and water in rural communities and destroy local economies. LSP members who raised pigs approached the organization about developing a campaign to put the future of the checkoff up for a nationwide vote among farmers. In response, Mark Schultz, who was then LSP's policy director, worked with organizers like Paul Sobosinski, Bobby King, and Mike McMahon to develop a petition drive and organizing campaign involving Minnesota hog farmers. This initiative was part of a national campaign coordinated by the multi-state Campaign for Family Farms and the Environment. The campaign was a major success. After an energetic petition drive, in 2001, farmers across the country voted to end the mandatory pork checkoff. Although the farmers' vote was eventually overturned by a backroom deal between the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture and the National Pork Producers Council, the checkoff campaign had far-reaching positive impacts in the areas of policy, land-grant research, and society's awareness of who controls the food system. For example, the nationally recognized research on sustainable livestock production systems taking place at the University of Minnesota's West Central Research and Outreach Center has its roots in the checkoff campaign. In addition, as a result of the organizing that took place during the campaign, LSP farmer members found their voices were being heard as far away as the halls of Congress. One result was the Conservation Stewardship Program, a precedent-setting farm bill initiative that was the brainchild of LSP members and which has had significant impact on agricultural conservation over the years. Paul Sobosinski was deeply involved in the anti-checkoff campaign, both as an LSP member and staff organizer. Paul had a personal stake in the issue. He's been farming in southwestern Minnesota's Redwood County since 1976. He's also a veteran hog producer, raising pork most recently for Nyman Ranch, which focuses on humane, sustainable production systems. During the campaign, Paul traveled the Midwest meeting with farmers and policymakers. He also hosted phone banks out of his home near Wabasso and did media interviews. Paul even debated Pork Producers Council officials on the radio and, along with other hog farmers from throughout the Midwest, confronted them at their headquarters in Des Moines, Iowa. I worked with Paul, other LSP organizers, and farmer members during the checkoff campaign. What always struck me was how, even with the odds stacked against LSP and other groups that were part of the Campaign for Family Farms and the Environment, Paul never lost hope and always believed in the transformative power of organizing. He maintains that his belief in the power of people to come together and create change comes from the fact that his father had done organizing for the National Farmers Organization. Paul himself did a lot of organizing during the 1980s farm crisis, and his deep Catholic faith and work with LSP pioneers like Mark Schultz and Sister Mary Tacheny has also been a big influence on him. After serving as an LSP organizer for several years, Paul is now working with a Minnesota Farmers Union initiative that's trying to get more local meat processing established in the state. I recently stopped by the farm Paul owns and operates with his wife, Candy, and talked to him about the Pork Checkoff campaign and its long-term impacts. We also chatted about the power of organizing and why, despite all the turmoil in agriculture and rural communities he's witnessed over the years, Paul still sees a positive future for the family farm.
Let's talk about the Pork Checkoff. Why, of all things, so we came out of the farm crisis. You were very much involved with the farm crisis, and LSP had been working on stewardship issues, conservation, soil conservation issues, land access issues, that type of thing. But in the 1990s, we got very much involved with the Pork Checkoff campaign. Can you give us a little background? Why, of all things, why was that seen as a real... And we put a lot of energy into it, and a lot of hours and miles and effort. Why the Pork Checkoff?
Well, the Pork Checkoff really came out of the awareness that there was an attack being done on family farms and family farm livestock in Minnesota. We saw that when we created the Factory Farm Awareness Campaign in the Land Stewardship Project about the awareness that these kinds of operations would have a significant effect upon stewardship of the land, mm-hmm. and take away the independence control that farmers had over making the independent decisions on the livestock and that they raise on their farms. And one of the key elements of that part of the work was the issue of keeping local control, the rights of counties, townships, to decide what they want in their communities. And as we worked on that, we realized that Minnesota couldn't be an island unto itself. Mm-hmm. And at the time, the person I worked with, Mark Schultz, helped devise the idea of creating a campaign for family farms, of connecting with other states, with Iowa, with Missouri, rural crisis, for example, were key leaders, and that connection was developed. And as a result of doing that and seeing the real pressure in the hog industry, mm-hmm. we thought we had to have a fight back, and that's how the Pork Checkoff piece was built. That's how we looked at that, and we assessed, well, there's this drive to get rid of independent hog farmers. You know, right during that period of time, hog prices went lower than the terms of the Great Depression of mm-hmm. 1998, and yet the leaders were out in Washington, D.C., pushing this different style of agriculture. Al Tank was saying, expand and seize market share.
And all of a sudden, he was the president of the NPPC at the National Pork Producers Council.
He was their
at the
executive director. Mm-hmm. And we just shook our head. Expand and seize market share. But he meant what he said. Yeah. He meant the big boys take over and drive the little ones out. Mm-hmm. These low prices will do the job.
We should point out, you had a personal stake in this, and that you've been a hog farmer for many, many years. That's part of your farming background.
Well, that's right. And, you know, personally, I saw what happened on our farm. I was extremely fortunate. At the time, I had half the hogs that I had before because mm-hmm. I went to work for Land Stewardship Project and Organizing. But still, 1998 was very trying. Mm-hmm. You know, we had to turn in our life insurance policies.
Oh, boy. Yeah. No, I'm sorry.
So, but anyway, we were fortunate, you know, at least we stood up and fought back, and mm-hmm. part of the effort and part of that set the stage for Land Stewardship Project to be clearly defined as non-organization concerned about the environment and stewardship, but concerned about the farmers on the land mm-hmm. and their ability to make a living as farmers. Mm-hmm. And that those two were linked together, and they didn't need to be divided.
Yeah, yeah.
It created the opportunity for us to go on and win key battles, you know, in forming a federal farm policy committee. Again, people across different political spectrums came together and said, we need to have a conservation security program. And again, it was our reputation of being farmers.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the campaign itself. Can you describe kind of some of the strategies that were used and some of the methods that were used to kind of get hog farmers organized?
Well, some of the strategies we organized in various areas. For example, at Bolivia, Minnesota Center for Spiritual Development of the Catholic Church, you know, we organized a group of people to participate with us in a pork chop dinner. These were hog farmers who cared about what was happening. This effort was being led by hog farmers. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, we built a campaign group of hog farmers that were part of the fight back. Another strategy we did was sitting down and looking at, you know, doing an assessment. Where are the hog farmers? How do we reach them? How do we reach them from a media standpoint? We didn't have the dollars
right
that the other folks had.
We didn't have checkoff dollars.
But we ran some pretty effective radio ads. Mm-hmm. Like on WCCO radio, it cost us money. But yep, it was a very sharp ad that we ran, mm-hmm, with hog farmers part of it. So we had good coverage because we articulated this was a big concern. We were able to get, you know, fairer coverage than we would have got otherwise. Mm-hmm. We also looked at the publications that reached hog farmers. So we ran ads, you know, for example, in different farm publications in which farmers could return a piece about the checkoff that they, you know, that they were opposed to it and wanted the right to have the vote. We had to have a petition in order to have the right to vote.
You're right.
And so that's the first thing we did, was formulate that process by which we gathered petitions. You know, we did it through tabling. We did it by calling hog farmers. I ran three lines out of my home here, in which various farmers would come over here, and we'd be doing a night of calling, talking to hog farmers. And that was all part of the process. Mm-hmm. Then it built up enough momentum that we were able to pull the votes and do that. And the port, we had to pull across the United States.
Yeah.
So that was a significant effort to reach those. And so we involved other organizations besides the three key ones, you know, Iowa CCI and Missouri Rural Crisis and Land Stewardship Project, but we involved other folks. I mean, part of that story really is the inventiveness of Mark saying to me, Paul, you know, maybe we could sign you up to work for, connect in with the OAP apprenticeship.
Oh, the Organized Apprenticeship Project.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is a training. We should explain what that is. It's a
training piece for organizers. Mm-hmm. Beth Newthcart was the head of that particular program. Mm-hmm. I was in the first class of that program with a number of people from other immigrants and other people, mm-hmm, people of color from around the Twin Cities area. So it gave me exposure to that group of people. You know, got exposure to with Steve. No, I'm not forgetting. Steve O'Neill,
yeah. A great LSP organizer. Actually, the first LSP organizer that was hired by Ron Cruz.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark came right after him, I believe.
Yeah. So, yeah, Steve, unfortunately, is no longer with us. He passed away too young. But he was a great influence on organizing the way we do organizing.
That particular piece gave me 6 months, a little more in-depth organizing experience. Mm-hmm. And training to match up to what I already had, with more emphasis on how to empower other people. That part was the groundwork.
Did that experience help you a little bit in that you were farming here, you were starting to see things change and not for the good? So it can be tempting sometimes for folks to say, well, that's kind of inevitable. It's the inevitable cycle of economics and all of that, and this is the way it's going to go for agriculture. But for you to be involved with, say, an organizing training program or with folks from all around the country who were like, no, we're not going to accept this. This isn't inevitable. Did that help you a little bit, kind of give you a little bit of...
Well, I think so. I remember one of the other pieces of organizing was being taught there for people of color were facing the challenge of being discriminated by banks. There was explanations of how some of those people came together and fought back and stood up. I think that always emphasized to me was two kinds of power, the power of money and the power of people. Mm. And the power of people can win when organized against money. But you have to do an assessment. You have to figure out what you're going after. You have to have a number of goals and be together and support each other together and, you know, that type of piece. And I think that's that piece, you know, and the opportunity to get acquainted more in LSP, you know, help broaden me. Hope broadened me, LSP broadened me, LSP broadened me in terms of understanding conservation, understanding the linkage with the environment, with the community, how to be together.
So back to the pork checkoff campaign, the end result was what we got. We got more than a majority of farmers in the country voted to end the checkoff campaign. Great victory. A little bit short-lived in that there was a backroom deal made between the then Secretary of Agriculture and the National Pork Producers Council.
That's correct, yeah.
To continue the checkoff. Very disappointing, and it just, yeah, that's a real gut punch to do something that's so steeped in democracy and then to have that kind of the rug pulled out from under you. But what's always struck me is that that campaign was so strong and involved so many people and so many elements and had so many connections, both geographically and kind of within institutions, that just because we got the rug pulled out from underneath us, that didn't mean it was a failure. In some ways, it really sparked a lot of other positive changes. And to me, the reason I really am fascinated by that whole checkoff campaign and what happened afterwards is, to me, it's an example of, sure, you got to have goals, but you also have to be willing to pivot a little bit and realize when you don't reach your ultimate goal, that doesn't mean it's all done, that there are other, if it's a strong enough campaign and a strong enough, you have enough good people involved, you're going to get other positive impacts down the road. And this seems to be a real good example of that. Can you talk about some of those positive impacts we saw that went beyond that initial vote to end the checkoff?
Well, the positive impacts, you know, that came from doing a nationwide campaign and doing a lot of work in Iowa and Missouri that came back to Minnesota was our ability to have a stronger influence in the Minnesota legislature to be able to carry forward and have a strong voice about saying support for sustainable and organic agriculture, for giving more resources that way. Particularly like up at Morris, Minnesota, you know, the development of an alternative livestock piece.
At there. The West Central Research and Outreach Center, their experiment station.
That's
there.
Correct.
Yeah.
Both with the farrowing setup and also hoop houses for finishing pigs and then a hoop house for, you know, for gestation pigs. So it really set the stage of that, you know, set the stage too for that a university ought to have the research other than more than one kind of system and not be chunked into just supporting one kind of system.
Right.
But to do the research that other farmers who didn't want to take that route go.
And that of course, that kind of primed the pump too for the other thing that West Central Research and Outreach Center has is one of the only organic dairy research.
That's correct.
And so that helped spark that too,
right?
Because people are like, oh, there's, it's not just one conventional dairy model that we should be looking at here.
We're able to articulate and drive policy that we wanted at the university, and sometimes the university didn't want it too bad. But we were another force recognized, and the university ended up respecting us for some of that work. You know, in terms of what got done.
I think that's a good point. In that we were, and I speak as someone who is doing communications for LSP and working with the ag media in particular. Frankly, before the campaign, the pork checkoff campaign, they kind of thought we were a bunch of goofballs. They didn't take us seriously as a farm organization, didn't give us much coverage. If they did give us much coverage, it was often in a negative light or kind of a dismissive light.
Right.
But that changed after the campaign. Like you said, they had to take us seriously, and then the institutions such as a university had to, and
right,
lawmakers did too, it seems like.
Yeah, and I think that's what made a difference, because we were able to come across as a organization that stood with farmers, another perspective about how farmers can be good for the environment, about how to reward farmers for good stewardship. And that agriculture's past has been a lot built upon innovation. And some of the stewardship work we were doing was innovation. And the leadership of getting the university to understand that things like Forever Green and our wave of the future, it's what we're operating off of right now.
Yeah.
But that came through some long, hard battles.
Yeah. And Forever Green, for people who aren't aware, is a initiative at the university that is researching, I would almost call them third crops, but there's more than a third crop. There, it's these things like Kernza, this intermediate wheatgrass that's a perennial, have come out of that. There's some others. They're trying to kind of diversify that corn-soybean system. LSP was real involved with getting the legislature to fund that and get lawmakers to see that the future isn't just corn and beans and big CAFOs, that there is a demand for that. So that, I mean, that has its roots, too, in that campaign of people respecting us and seeing us as standing for farming and agriculture, that type of thing.
So, I you know, a lot of this work set a path and a policy forward that we needed to respect diversity in agriculture. Started us on a path now, understanding, you know, like at the Department of Ag and emerging farmers, that we can have all kinds of farmers, and small farmers can be very important to Minnesota's economy, and they should be part of it, and how to grow that connection. Many people are starting to identify with, you know, local food, the importance of having good food in their schools.
Mm-hmm.
is an important piece. I think that's, you know, that's been built as a result of a lot of hard work that the Land Stewardship Project has you know, set in place.
Farmers belong to different commodity organizations and they do good work in their own way, but I guess trying to highlight that these commodity organizations, again, don't represent all farmers and don't represent kind of agriculture in a big picture way, that they represent their particular commodity, which is all well and good, but we have to step back sometimes and look at the big picture. Well, is this good for the rural community? Is it good for the food system? Is it good for the environment? Something that maybe commodity groups, when they get too narrowly focused, it's kind of hard for them to do a little bit. I mean, is that right?
Well, I think that's right. I think it's also right now that a lot of farmers are asking the question, you know, what's our share of the food dollar?
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the pieces that we really struck home in the Pork Checkoff campaign, that the farmer's share of the food dollar has diminished under the checkoff, so therefore it's not effective. And yeah, the farmer deserves his fair share of the food dollar, and something's wrong when the original producer can't feed his family. And I think that that critical analysis is important in today's situation with hog farming. I mean, right now, today, the last 2 years, the average hog farmer in Minnesota under this large concentrated system has lost an average of $25 per head. The former apologist for the pork producers was saying this is as bad as 1998. What they caused was consolidation, and those people who are a part of that making less.
Mm-hmm.
So it points again that farmers need to think about that, stand up, and build a different system. What's happened here now in the last couple of years with COVID, many people are finally acknowledging we should not have all our eggs in one basket.
Mm-hmm.
and have a more diverse, you know, meat processing system. It's a tough uphill battle, but it's one that's being acknowledged.
The powers that be in the pork industry were saying, well, the way to deal with this is to grab market share. And I remember back when the hog industry was really consolidating at a record pace, hog farmers were saying, well, at least we're not the chicken industry. We're not as bad off as them, which is, that's a whole other podcast, but the chicken industry early on consolidated, and it's a terrible situation. It's a terrible setup where you're basically a barn janitor. You take orders on how much feed to give those chickens, and you're paying debt to pay off that facility, and then by the time you get it paid off, the thing is worn down, and you don't really have control over how you're raising those chickens or anything. So they said, well, at least we're not as bad as that. Well, now that the hog industry is starting to resemble that, you're seeing things like the dairy industry saying, well, at least we're not as bad as the hog industry. But I'm seeing certain powerful interests in the dairy industry. We're involved with a couple of big fights with big CAFO dairies trying to take over in communities. I'm seeing the same situation where they're saying, well, the way to compete is we have to get bigger and bigger and take market share. And so it's funny how that narrative kind of runs through all of agriculture in a way. We've seen, it's like you would think we'd learn by now. We see the end result, and it's never good.
Yeah, what's remarkable, and I think it's up to us, all of us, to keep pointing out to people, think about the power that you have in organizing. Think about how you come together with your neighbor and stand up for what you need and what your community. And yes, you have to assess power, but you just don't have to take it either. We need to look at how we say to policymakers, who are you going to support, you know, mm-hmm. in Minnesota? Who are you going to be with? Do you really want to have people more captured, or do you want to have people have opportunity? So in one sense, LSP is a small business entrepreneur advocate.
Yes. Yeah, I like that. Well, and we've certainly seen that through Farm Beginnings and all the folks that have gone through that. You've been involved. You were very involved with the farm crisis and foreclosure protests, penny auctions, all of that stuff back in the 80s. You've come through some really hard times yourself, but you've also worked with other farmers who've come through hard times. Here we are in 2024. Just in general, how do you feel about the future of agriculture? We've been on the verge of people saying, that's it for the family farm. We're done. It's done. But kind of sticks in there. I don't know. But how do you feel right now?
Well, I don't think the family farm is done. It's always been under challenge. And I think there's a sense, particularly in the immigrant population and others, that desire, the desire for entrepreneurship. I think there's a frustration by many people that the way agriculture is devised, that farmers don't have much voice. But voices have been won in the past by people organizing and standing together and working together, building relationships together. So I think there is opportunity as long as people pull together, respect each other, and figure out how to create opportunities in spite of diversity. In this country, it's always been a fight of money versus the power of people, and it's always a challenge, and organizing is the way forward.
So it sounds like you kind of have a lot of hope yet.
Oh, I have hope. That's right. I wouldn't do this work if I didn't have hope.
The Land Stewardship Project's involvement with the Port Checkoff campaign is described in the book Making Change from the Ground Up, 40 Stories for 40 Years of Land Stewardship Project. For details on the book, as well as more on LSP's history and our policy work, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 333 at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org. Or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members, who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.